Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of the Dissident Film Club. My name is Keaton Weiss, back with Justin Van Voris.
Yeah, I'm here. Why do you count the numbers?
I don't know.
Is that important? Is that an important thing to do?
Some people do it, some people don't. I just try to differentiate this intro from the intro to the main show, because on the main show, I don't announce the numbers. Why? Is that a problem for you?
It's like, I guess it's for the continuity-minded listeners who are like, damn, forgot six.
Right, yeah, exactly. If I mention what episode we're on and they missed one, they know before they do anything else, they should go back and listen to the last one.
All right. Well, so, I am here.
All right, excellent. So we are going to do some escapist fun today and talk about our favorite campaign movies now that the campaign season is in full swing. And, you know, the premise of this show basically is to do, like, politically relevant cinema. But the irony is that as we do this show about our campaign movies, I find that basically all of the movies that we've picked are sort of, like I said, escapist picks. I don't feel like any of them are particularly relevant to this moment, which kind of makes them interesting in a sort of historical sense, because it's like this sort of time capsule. I mean, the last one, which is a sort of mutual pick of ours, has some relevance in some ways, which we will get to. But these are films that are really of like a bygone political era, which I think is interesting. But they're great and they're fun, and so I guess we'll get to it.
All right, so who shall? First of all, I can't believe that campaign season is upon us in general. Like in 2 months, less than 2 months is the election.
Yeah, exactly. It feels very strange just because there's not many rallies going on or anything like that. It's all very kind of static.
Right, it's very strange, but it's there. It's there. All right, so who should begin?
Well, go ahead. Why don't you get started?
So the first pick, and these are not in any order. I don't think we're doing a countdown here. But one of my favorite movies is a movie called Primary Colors, which was from, I believe, 1997. It's directed by Mike Nichols and stars John Travolta. And it was based on a book called Primary Colors, and it was released anonymously. And a lot of people felt that it was written by a guy named Joe Klein, who covered the Clinton campaign for Newsweek, and he denied it and denied it and denied it until eventually he admitted it. Because the movie closely resembles the Bill Clinton presidential campaign originally, John Travolta plays a obvious caricature of Bill Clinton. Emma Thompson plays an obvious caricature of Hillary Clinton. Billy Bob Thornton plays an obvious caricature of, his name just escaped my mind. Who's the strategist, Democratic strategist, Southern guy?
I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about.
You must know. His wife is conservative.
Oh, James Carville.
James Carville.
Sorry, you didn't narrow it down. Who's that Democratic strategist?
Well, he worked for he worked for the Clinton campaign.
Okay. All right.
All right. Get with it. And get your head in the game.
I haven't seen this movie since basically it came out. Like, I watched it with my parents, I think, when they rented it on VHS.
It's interesting.
It's not fresh in my mind.
You were, what, 11 when that 11, movie? Yeah. That's very in between watches of Mulan, you put on Primary Colors.
Well, I didn't put it on. I think my mom and dad were watching it, and I was just like hanging out.
It's obviously a caricature of the Clinton campaign, and it's. I mean, if you watch it, you think that like when the trailer came out, it kind of looks like a direct biopic about Bill Clinton, but it's actually about a guy named Jack Stanton who's running for the Democratic nomination for president. And so the movie, like I said, it's obviously a caricature of the Clinton campaign, and things happen in the movie that are kind of reminiscent of things that actually happened in the actual Clinton campaign. It's really about one of the staffers working for the Jack Stanton campaign who gets involved with the campaign because he believes in Jack Stanton's message and he believes in him as a candidate and his politics and that he'll be a good president. But by the end of the movie, he has become disillusioned by the political process. And that has a lot to do with the fact that during the political campaign, despite the fact that he agrees with Jack Stanton and what he wants to do with this country, is that he kind of just doesn't he discovers that Jack Stanton essentially is not a very good person. Over the course of the movie, this particular staffer just kind of becomes disillusioned with this man. But he doesn't become disillusioned with the politics. And that is where I think that's what I like about the movie. This is where I find the movie very, very interesting and kind of represents how I feel about the political process and how, in terms of like the politicians we have, the presidents that we've had, none of them have been perfect men. They've all been flawed, and in some cases, deeply flawed. And so there's even a parallel in the movie where, having discovered what Jack Stanton has done, this one character who's played by Kathy Bates in the movie, who works for that campaign, she becomes so upset that over time she's idolized the Jack Stanton and his wife characters, and then discovers all these bad things about them, and ultimately because of it, commits suicide. And so anybody watching that movie could also see that the suicide parallels the suicide of Vince Foster, that a lot of people feel that the Clinton campaign had to do with. It was actually a murder, and they covered it up as a suicide. And so when you watch the movie, there's a very interesting parallel there. But like I said, that's what I find interesting about the movie, is at the end of the movie, the character, his name is Harry, decides to continue on with the campaign, despite the fact that he knows that Jack Stanton is not a very good guy. He continues on. Jack Stanton becomes president, and he works for the administration. And I feel that in my own beliefs, it represents the fact that like none of these people are perfect, but they follow – but that we believe in the politics, in the message. And so we're still going to go along with these people despite the fact that they are so flawed. We put the politics ahead of the man. We put the message ahead of the man, what they can do for this country. What is more important, you know, how you feel about this particular person or how you feel about what this person could do for the country. And that's – I think that's a very interesting kind of conflict there. And that's why I like it, and that's why I picked it.
All right, very good. Yeah, it's there's another documentary called The War Room, which is follows those Clinton campaign people, Carville and Stephanopoulos. Yeah, and that's a doc by D.A. Pennybacker. Is it Pennybacker or Pennybacker? I never
Baker.
Baker.
Penny
okay. Yeah, so that's some interesting viewing to go along with that. I guess I'll go with one of my picks. I was going to do my other one first, but this is actually a somewhat similar plot line, and that's The Ides of March. And The Ides of March, I believe, was 2014, came out, and that was directed by George Clooney.
No. That movie came out much earlier. We're talking about 2010, 2011.
Okay, 2011, 2010, fine. How do you remember that?
I did watch it recently, and of course, you know, I maybe went on Wikipedia
and found it out
to find right. Find out how old Evan Rachel Wood was when I watched it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it was directed by George Clooney, and it has a fantastic ensemble cast. It's actually based on a play called Farragut North by Bo Willimon, and it is a very similar story to Primary Colors in many ways. You know, it's about a staffer, Ryan Gosling plays the lead, who follows, you know, this ideal presidential candidate. George Clooney actually plays the candidate in the race. And they really create this sort of Obama-esque sort of theme around his campaign. They actually mocked or did a sort of imitation of the Shepard Fairey Obama portrait for the George Clooney candidate. So they were obviously trying to mirror the sort of spirit of the Obama campaign.
Clooney has an also interesting connection to that painting, as you know, right?
Oh no, I didn't know that.
So the image is based on a photograph, and
yeah.
In that photograph, Obama is actually listening to George Clooney speak.
Oh really? I did not know that. That's interesting. Oh, wow. That's a nice little factoid. Anyway, so, yeah, the same thing happens. The candidate has an affair with one of the interns on the staff, played by Evan Rachel Wood, and it takes a very dark turn. I mean, it's a drama. It's very, very fast-paced, entertaining. The cast is absolutely fantastic. One of the best ensemble casts, I think, of any movie in the last decade, really.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
George Clooney, Ryan Gosling, Marissa Tomei, Evan Rachel Wood, Paul Giamatti, and Philip Seymour Hoffman as sort of the dueling campaign managers. Jeffrey Wright is in it. It's a fantastic ensemble cast. Super just fast-paced, entertaining movie. And the way this movie ends is kind of right before the Ryan Gosling character makes the kind of decision that you just talked about in your Primary Colors summary, where the end of the movie takes place literally the instant before he has to decide whether he is going to toe the line and continue with the campaign because he believes in the vision, right, and the message, or whether he is going to spill the beans on this scandal that turns deadly. I don't want to give it away too much what happens, but it's a really, really fun movie. I've watched that movie about 3 or 4 times, and I usually don't repeat viewings anymore of movies. Like, well, now I don't. Now it's hard for me to even get through a movie in one sitting with two kids, but even prior to this, I don't usually watch movies more than once, but this one I actually bought on DVD. It's one of the last movies I actually bought on DVD. You know, it was a used section or whatever it was on sale, and I turned it on from time to time because it's that entertaining. There's not a dull moment in it.
No, I know. I loved it. I saw it once, and then I just rewatched it last week, and I remember when I saw it for the first time, I really loved it, but when I put it on, I was like, I actually don't remember what this movie actually is about.
So in the scene when he checks her cell phone, was that a surprise to you, or did you remember it by then?
I remembered it, but I didn't remember what. But I didn't remember exactly what happened to the Evan Rachel Wood character. And essentially, I was like thinking, like, how bad is George Clooney? No, it is amazing. Bo Willimon, of course, it's based on a play of his, and he created House of Cards, that famous political show. But it is a thrilling movie. It's an extremely tight movie. It is the performance. Yeah, it's like I said, one of the best casts. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman is fantastic in it. And it's just such a thrilling movie.
Yeah, and it's unpredictable. You know, it's never like the sort of turning point, the movie, the scene that really jolts the movie into action, which I just mentioned, where he finds out that, you know, Evan Rachel Wood's character is having a relationship with this ideal sort of pristine Obama-esque candidate, just turns the entire movie on its head. And then there's all this very clever sort of warring trickery between the campaigns, between Giamatti and Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know, where they sort of trick Ryan Gosling into thinking that he should switch sides, right? I mean, there's all kinds of intrigue going on. It's just super entertaining, and you you're never one step out in front of it. It's always one step in front of the audience, which just makes it a really fun viewing because there's surprises around every turn.
I like the chemistry between the characters are fantastic. The dialogue between Evan Rachel Wood and Ryan Gosling is fantastic. And one of the things that I do always pat Hollywood on the back for is that Hollywood is this predominantly liberal, democratic establishment who obviously is always going after the Obama-esque candidate. But this is another example of where they make a movie about their own party that is deeply flawed. Like, George Clooney's message, his character's message, I forget what his character's name is in the movie, but his entire platform is integrity. Integrity
honesty matters. Integrity matters.
Which is obviously the exact opposite of what's going on in this particular candidate, in this particular campaign. And, you know, Hollywood, because they're so liberal, they could easily make this about a horrible Republican candidate, and they probably would rather. But the fact that they actually poke holes and show that their own party is infallible, I think speaks to a greater thing.
You said infallible. You mean their own party is fallible.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I get that word wrong?
That's all
right. Is infallible.
I mispronounced. I, you know, sometimes it happens. You know, that's the high stakes of the podcasting world. It's a tightrope.
Well, thank you for correcting me, because then, you know, at home, people are going to be like, he said that word wrong. I heard one time that the closest thing to being like a ghost is when you hear something wrong on a podcast and you try to correct them, but obviously they can't hear what you're saying.
Well, I did the same thing. The last week I went on a friend of ours' show, and I meant to say pretens. I said portens, which is obviously a very different meaning. But yeah, no, I mean, so the thing about this movie that's interesting, because you mentioned how, you know, they poke fun at their own, or not poke fun, but they sort of, you know, are willing to acknowledge the flaws of their own party. There's a line in the movie, I can't forget if it's Giamatti or Hoffman. Giamatti is the advisor for the Republican candidate, right? And Hoffman works?
No. It's they're actually both Democratic.
Oh,
they're
right.
For the nomination.
For the other candidate in the nomination, right.
Yeah.
And Giamatti says at one point, like, that's the Democrats' problem, is they won't get dirty and roll around
yeah,
the
they
mud
won't
with
get
the
rough.
Elephants,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was
that's
listening.
Exactly what happens.
Well, I was listening to George Clooney do an audio commentary, and he loved that line. And, you know, this is an example of, like I said, liberal blindness. Like, the idea that the Republicans are always dirtier than the Democrats is just not really true. And, you know, and that's why I say that, like, this is sort of from a bygone era where, you know, liberals, I mean, I guess it's from a bygone era for me personally, back when I was of the mindset that Republicans were always dirtier than Democrats. There are a lot of liberals who still feel that way. Yeah, this is sort of like, you know, it does sort of reflect this sort of holier than thou, sort of above it all mentality that a lot of mainstream liberals have, which is like, oh, well, this is how the sausage is made. We have to be okay with a guy, you know, having an affair with an intern and then having it turn very dark and deadly because, you know, this is the price of doing business. The Republicans are always worse, right? So it's okay, you know, so we can rationalize this kind of stuff because we're just keeping up with this other side that is, we just take for granted, is always dirtier and sleazier and more evil. So I just think that's an interesting sort of way to look at the movie through, especially since it was released, like I said, just 2 years after Obama won. So that was one interesting part. And then there was another interesting thing about the movie is that the play, Farragut North, actually does not feature the candidate himself. So the George Clooney character in the movie is actually not in the stage version. Which is a conceit that I think you can get away with more on the stage than you can on film.
Right.
Just because there's just like a built-in conceit when you're watching a play that, you know, you can avoid certain locations, certain things. Whereas a movie, it would be very obvious that they're hiding the candidate from you. But yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic movie. Loads of fun.
Agreed. So my next pick is a movie called Game Change, which kind of relates to current politics. I think that, okay, this is a word I may not be using right. I think current politics may have been exacerbated by the situations in Game Change. Did I use that word correctly?
I think you meant exacerbated, not
what
exacerbated. You said exacerbated.
Okay, well, that's just because
you didn't put the X in.
I had a stroke recently. but no.
Exacerbated means worsened, aggravated, irritated.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so I did use it correctly.
Good job.
I'm new. Game Change was it part of a series of political movies that were done by HBO and directed by Jay Roach, who directed Meet the Parents and Austin Powers. And he did a movie called Recount, which, of course, was obviously about the 2000 recount. He did Game Change. And he last year he did a movie called Bombshell, which was about the Fox News scandal with Megyn Kelly, which was okay. It was very weird, which is a movie we should talk about. So have you seen that movie?
No, sir.
It's a very interesting we should talk about that movie sometime. But anyways, and these movies, they kind of have a TV movie quality to them. Both of those movies, Recount and Game Change, still just have a lot of great stuff in it. And Game
Change, they're very entertaining, yeah.
And Game Change, of course, is about the 2008 election when Sarah Palin was picked as John McCain's running mate. Of course, she's played by Julianne Moore. John McCain's played by Ed Harris. And Woody Harrelson plays Steve Schmidt. It's a very entertaining film because, obviously, she's a idiot. And it's funny because she's an idiot. But it's also such a dangerous situation because they felt the need that to get this person that they did not properly vet when she is a heartbeat away from becoming president. John McCain, very elderly man. If John McCain became president, he would have died, 2 years after his last term of presidency?
Yeah, so, that's assuming that the presidency wouldn't have aged him. They say the presidency
right, as it often
him,
does.
So he could have died sooner.
Exactly. You never know. And it starts with the fact that, like, the idea of the celebrity candidate, how the movie starts out, their impetus for picking a game-changing candidate is that Obama had become so popular and they saw him as nothing more than a celebrity candidate. He's like a rock star. And they saw that as, you know, not just like a popularity thing, like, oh, that's a popular candidate, but they saw him more, what they saw went beyond that. They saw him as not a politician, as a celebrity. They thought, you know, he's not a real politician. He's a community organizer. He's a junior senator. But, you know, people like his speeches. He's a charismatic candidate. And he's all words and image, and to them that's a celebrity in terms of popularity. So that was that's why they need a game-changing candidate, because their candidate was a very old war hero, and so for Vice they needed a similar kind of candidate. And ultimately what they did was they created their own celebrity in Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin became a celebrity because she obviously was different from all the other candidates. She was not properly prepared. She was not properly vetted. She didn't know enough about anything. And, of course, she had very controversial things in her background. And because of who she was, that made her a celebrity. And for some, some people liked her, and obviously a lot of people didn't like her. And so, obviously, you probably have your own theories on why Obama won that term, but a lot of people do believe is that, you know, John McCain lost because there's no confidence. There was no confidence in that woman. And if there was ever a instance where she would become president, then we might all be doomed. But what that situation did is that the Palin potential vice presidency, or Palin on the national stage of politics, was kind of the beginning of the anti-intellectual politics in terms of conservatism. But she was an anti-intellectual candidate. And, you know, when I think of conservatism, I think of people like George Will. And that's kind of like the first thing. And, as long as I've been following politics, and obviously this goes back to the times that I've only lived in, which is the 90s through now, is that you're seeing now a lot of Republican candidates who are kind of on the anti-intellectual side of things. And those are the candidates that are, you know, people like your Herman Cain's, people like them, who are taking the national stage and getting attention. And that's how, and between that and the whole celebrity factor of politics, is that leads the way to people like Trump, because Trump was exactly, it's almost the inverse of Obama, because he had no political experience, but he was a voice and he was an image. And because of that, that's why he was so popular for many. And that kind of starts a lot with the creation of Sarah Palin. That's why I get so angry when, you know, I see Steve Schmidt on Bill Maher or writing articles about how, you know, he's renouncing the Republican Party because of its turn towards Donald Trump, when I think, like, dude, this is your fault. The reason why we have him is because of you and your obvious incompetence, that you felt that instead of getting a real political candidate, you decide to go with this route. I mean, there's a scene in the movie where they literally just go on YouTube and look up female Republican candidates. And like the first several, they looked at Susan Collins was one of them, are like, you know, fucking boring. And then they get to Sarah Palin, and she was a more exciting candidate. That whole kind of celebrity aspect, it's anti-intellectualism, and that is what led to the situation that we are ultimately in now.
Yeah, I'm glad you said what you said about Steve Schmidt. I definitely had that point to make also. You know, he's one of like the few dozen Republicans who like to lecture the current Republican Party about how like irresponsible they are and how irresponsible and reckless Donald Trump is. You know, it was his idea to put this woman a heartbeat away from the presidency when the top of the ticket guy has, you know, 70 something years old and has like cancer on his face still. I like the movie quite a bit. In terms of like when did the anti-intellectualism on the right start, I don't know if it started with Sarah Palin. I think it has existed for quite some time. I don't know where you could say that started. I think it's been really brewing.
But mainstream?
Well, I mean, you could definitely say that ratcheted it up a notch, because it gave it a certain bombast, right? And a certain swagger that it hadn't really had before. In terms of like any figurehead, right? Like Sarah Palin was a sort of poster child for this like populist anti-government sort of strain of conservatism. But I mean, that ideology, just like this like blanket anti-government sensibility, really came about, you know, in the Republican Party starting with Reagan. It didn't have such an overt, in your face sort of combative figurehead. Like even Reagan, right? Reagan spoke against the government, but Reagan was very buttoned down, right? Reagan was, you know, a very wholesome sort of looking and sounding figure. Palin is not. Palin had an edge to her, right? I mean, Palin was, you know, she shot wolves from a fucking helicopter, right? I mean, she was like, there was this grubbiness about her. And I think, you know, that strain has certainly grown. And you could definitely say that she was a precursor to Donald Trump in many ways. So I think you're right about that. I just don't know if it started with her. I think she was, you know, one of the first real celebrities to take that on. In terms of that campaign, you know, it's so interesting because I don't know. It's really impossible to know whether or not they were actually right about picking her or not, whether or not that was a smart political move. I mean, generally speaking right now, it's thought to have not been, because they lost in a landslide, and because, you know, her numbers sort of rose and fell as the campaign went on. Yes, she became this sensation. She was packing arenas, right? People loved her. But then it did become clear that she was a bit of a fucking imbecile. But it's hard to tell whether that was a good call or not, because the recession hit 6 weeks before that vote happened. You know, the financial crisis hit on September 15th, 2008. In early September, McCain was actually leading in the national polls, right? And so, you know, despite the sort of controversial VP pick, right, you had Obama got off to a huge start. The, you know, McCain campaign said, oh, okay, we have to do something about this. We have to counter this with a star of our own, which I could understand that, right? I mean, because, you know, whoever wins the media war usually wins the race. And so if you got this rock star on the other side, you know, they usually win. Donald Trump was the rock star in 2016. He got all the media, right? He got all the buzz and he won. So I understand the sense that they had to do something about that. And they were up a couple points in the polls, and then the financial crisis hit, and that just that turned the tide in Obama's favor.
And
the
anything way out at all associated with Bush was poison.
Well, it became poison because he left office with, I believe, a 22% approval rating. But it's interesting to see how
he wasn't
that
even at the he made like a 10-second appearance at the convention. They didn't even want him at the convention.
No, they
year,
hid
right?
him. But the but it's interesting though how that would have turned out because McCain was up. It was close, but he was winning, you know, in national polls at least in early September. And then it's I mean, you don't know how it would have turned out. You don't know how that those final 2 months in the campaign would have gone. And then because of the financial crisis, it became moot because once that happened, that was the death blow to the GOP, and it was Obama's race from there on out, and he ended up winning by a landslide. But it's interesting to know the wisdom of that. But yeah, I liked the Game Change movie. I liked the book a lot. I liked their sequel to that, which was
Double Down,
which is about the Romney campaign.
Not as interesting.
Well,
I guess
was a more boring
to make a movie about
lend itself to a movie very well.
And then Mark, what's his name?
Halperin, the sexual harassment guy. Yeah, they were going to do a book about the 2016 race, and then it got canceled because of the accusations that came out against him. But those are entertaining books. They're very entertaining movies. Recount was great, too. I loved Recount.
Yeah, I didn't talk about the movie enough, but it's a very entertaining movie, and she is Julianne Moore is fantastic. She also kind of creates a sympathetic character to her in parts, but what's his name is great as John McCain as well. Overall, it's a very entertaining, kind of darkly humorous movie.
Yeah. So my next pick is not a darkly humorous movie. It's just a funny, goofy, slapstick movie, which we're not going to talk about that much because there's not much to say about it. But it's Black Sheep, the David Spade and Chris Farley vehicle. I would have talked about this first, but I thought Ides of March went better with Primary Colors. Just a fun little movie about a guy who's running for governor in Washington State, and his brother, played by Chris Farley, is the black sheep of the family. And it's such a contrived plot. It's like they hire David Spade to sort of keep a lid on the brother character, like to supervise him so that he doesn't create bad press for the candidate. And of course, it doesn't go that well, and all kinds of hijinks ensue. But it was so much fun. I was such a Chris Farley fan when I was a kid. His death was the first celebrity death that really like registered with me. Because I was just getting to like appreciate his stuff. And the thing about Farley that I thought is worth noting is that he was not like a comedic genius. Like some people say, oh, this guy's brilliant. No, Farley was not brilliant. Farley just had a style. He knew how to employ it, and he just made insanity so funny, right? I mean, his whole like physicality was just insane. He was over the top. He was just this whirlwind of like chaos and noise, but he just embraced all of it, and he was just so funny. He just made craziness so funny, and yeah. I love this movie. This is just a very entertaining movie. I love Gary Busey in it. He plays this like ex, you know, commando or whatever he was. Lives in a school bus surrounded by landmines in the middle of the woods, and so he's really fun in it. And it's just a fun little movie. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I love Chris Farley. I thought he was really great. But Black Sheep, you know, Tommy Boy is a great film. It's a great film. Black Sheep was the follow up. I don't know the last time. When was the last time you watched Black Sheep?
Oh, I don't know. A few years ago.
Yeah, see, so I only watched Black Sheep on your recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
I did not share your enthusiasm regarding it. I didn't think it was that funny. But I had always remembered the infamous story about Gene Siskel, you know, movie critics, and Gene Siskel Ebert, I guess, in particular, have a code that they will, you know, watch a movie from beginning to end, even if they hate it. And honestly, I agree with that. I don't really like when people like tell me like, oh yeah, that movie sucked, I turned it off 20 minutes into it, because you didn't really watch the movie. I don't respect your opinion because you didn't even finish the movie. And critics, of course, have that same ethics code. But And when it came to Black Sheep, Gene Siskel said it was the first movie that he actually left the theater in the middle of it because he felt it was so bad.
I think that's ridiculous.
I think that is ridiculous because it's not like you're actually, it's, you know, there are people who, you know, withstand torture
are movies that you can get so offended by that you walk out. Like there was that Tom Green movie called Freddy Got Fingered, which had like all this insane over the top shit. And I don't think Tom Green is funny at all, but like, that's a kind of movie where like you could get just so like disgusted by it that you like leave. What's in Black Sheep? That's like to hate.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, all right. You don't think it's that funny. That's fine. I think it's funny, but what if you, so what? I mean, what, it's worth walking out of? First of all, it's 80 minutes. Yeah. You can't stomach that runtime.
What else are you going to do?
Yeah. And so I think
have another threesome.
And I think it has, famous for. I think, oh really, Siskel?
Yeah.
I think it has heart to it because it's, you know, it's his brother and he becomes a liability for the campaign and the brother, you know, tries to, you know, thinks he might want to disown him and then at the end he warms back up to him. It's a classic, you know, feel good story. It's sentimental at parts. It's crazy. I think it's funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's good. I didn't find it funny, but it, you know, it's good. The only movies I ever walked out on were Titanic because I was a child. It was too intense for me. But the one movie I think I left because I just hated it so much I want to go was Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams.
Oh, really?
That was like a situation where it was like, I don't like this. I want to go home.
I forget who was with me. I think it wasn't you. I didn't know you at the time. But we were like 10 years old and we watched the Star Trek like Insurrection or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we left 10 minutes into it. We snuck into Prince of Egypt, the cartoon.
That's a great film. Didn't you leave? Didn't you see? Didn't you and Quixel leave Troy?
No, I didn't leave Troy.
All right.
I thought Troy was decent.
Troy is a decent film.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, Black Sheep.
Black Sheep. Not for me. All right. So then this last one is one that we both love. Very much, and that's Bob Roberts, which was written and directed by Tim Robbins, starring Tim Robbins, music written by Tim and David Robbins. It's a mockumentary about a right-wing folk singer who makes a run for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I had almost forgotten to put this on my list of movies, but it's so good. And you were kind enough to lend me your DVD copy so I could just rewatch it again to freshen up on it. And man, that is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
It's just so good. I mean, everything from the concept to the execution, it has this great plot. It's very, very funny. And then it gets very, very dark towards the end. There's this real sense of evil in it. But it's also, you know, a kind of light, goofy satire at times. Great cast. Tim Robbins is actually really good in it. I mean, he's really just like believable as this guy. Because if you know Tim Robbins' personal politics, you know how much contempt he has for people like Bob Roberts.
Yeah.
But he plays it so well. The songs are so funny. I mean, you know, like some of the lyrics are just so ironic. Like I just love, you know, because it's folk songs. It's Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan. A lot of his albums are satires of Dylan albums, like the Freewheelin' Bob Roberts, Bob on Bob. The Times Are Changing Back. That's a funny one. And then I love the song that he sings about how grandma felt so guilty about being rich.
Yeah.
My grandma thought, but then I'm going to take my inheritance and invest it with pride. And then he leads this whole sing-along about that. It's just, it's so clever. And it's, again, this is a bygone era when, like, liberals were cool and countercultural and edgy and funny, you know, before liberals became so like miserable and mean-spirited and all like the woke stuff and like snarky and condescending, like, you know, Stephen Colbert and all this stuff. Like it was back when liberals were like the underdogs. It was made in 1992, so, you know, it was after 8 years of Reagan, 4 years of Bush one. And yeah, like I said, it's sort of a time capsule of that period where, like, even mainstream Democrats, and I'm not talking about necessarily the politicians, but like a lot of Democratic voters were, like, you know, opposed to interventions in Latin America, which is sort of a sub theme of the movie. You know, they were anti-war. You had Gore Vidal, you know, famous leftist public intellectual, excuse me, play the rival candidate, the Democratic incumbent running for Senate. And so it's just a cool movie in so many ways, and the sort of mockumentary style of it works so well. The acting is so natural, and it's just, it's really fun.
Yeah, no, I love it. So yeah, so it's funny how it's like, I think they use the term rebel conservative a few times in the movie.
Yeah.
It's the fact that like when you associate folk singers, it is obviously with liberals, people of that ilk, yet you listen to them with that folk, that he even has like a Joan Baez partner at some point.
Yeah,
in the film.
Yeah. And yet he does all kinds of roots music. He doesn't folk. He does blues. Right. He does gospel. He does
roots music associated with conservatism. It's right. So weird. And you know what's interesting is that there's never been a soundtrack for that movie because he never wanted those songs to be used as anthems for actual Republican politics, which obviously you can get away with that now because obviously with the invention of you can just rip the songs from the movie. But there's never been any recordings made public of any of those songs, so no one could actually abscond with them. But what I like about the movie is it is, in terms of tone, it is absolutely genius how the movie almost tricks you because it begins as kind of you're watching, it's like a straightforward mockumentary. I know he was very influenced by Spinal Tap. And I think there's even a scene in the movie where they get lost on the way to the stage, which I believe is a callback to a scene in Spinal Tap.
Well, Spinal Tap, there's that famous scene where they're lost on the way to the
stage.
Right,
and that happens to Bob Roberts in the scene, with
the beauty
in
pageant.
The stairwell.
Yeah, and it's a long tracking
shot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, so the movie goes along, and you think that it's this kind of send-up of conservative politics or politics just in general. But then it really does make a turn. And by the end of the movie, you forget that you started this as a comedy. And it's not funny anymore. It's dark. And at moments, truly disturbing.
Yes.
And for a comedy, it's like there are some scenes, especially towards the end, that really leave you with an impression. And at the end, it's so good. And obviously, which I guess we can talk about how even a couple of years ago, Tim Robbins was quoted as saying that, you know, Bob Roberts precipitated Donald Trump. And at the end of the movie, I saw such an incredible parallel because throughout the movie, he has these throngs of followers that worship everything he does. And one of them is played by Thin Jack Black. And at the end of the movie, because like I said, this is a movie within a movie. It's a documentary that's being filmed by a British documentarian. There's a scene at the end of the movie where the British they're waiting outside Bob Roberts' hotel or wherever he's staying. And the British interviewer is asking Thin Jack Black, you know, why he loves Bob Roberts so much. And that sort of personality and the things he was saying is the exact same thing you would see if you interviewed a Trump supporter at like a campaign. It rang so true with the type of people that fall in love and follow those particular candidates. And the British interviewer says, no, I don't like him. I think he's very bad for your country. And by the end, they cheer on when, you know, it's my favorite Giancarlo Esposito
He doesn't pronounce it Esposito?
No.
How do you know
so
that?
You don't, well, because Esposito is Spanish. Esposito is Italian. He's part Italian.
Oh, he's Italian. Oh, okay. Interesting.
See? You learned something there.
I didn't know that.
And so he, of course, was famous. He's great in Do the Right Thing. Recently, he's gained fame because he was in Breaking Bad. But this is my favorite performance of his. And they cheer when that character dies. And it leaves you, the viewer, in a really dark place. That these events that we just witnessed were not as funny as we thought they were. And that is a movie that it's just so well done in every way. Yeah, it's like we mentioned D.A. Penny Baker earlier, and that was directly influenced by his documentary filmmaking. There's even a scene in the movie that is a parody of a scene in the Bob Dylan film, right. Don't Look Back, that he directed. But like you said, extremely naturalistic acting. Alan Rickman is very funny as his campaign manager. And that's a great movie that really is not talked about enough.
Yeah, no, it is this kind of strangely forgotten kind of movie, considering how good it is and how relevant many of its themes are. I mean, the thing about Bob Roberts versus Donald Trump, because I actually heard Tim Robbins went on Michael Moore's podcast a few months back, way back towards the beginning of this year, and talked about some of the similarities, you know, between Bob Roberts and Trump. And it's true, you know, they were both celebrities. They both had a very sort of cultish following. And yes, you're right. I mean, in terms of like the nationalistic, you know, jingoistic, patriotic messaging, there are certainly some similarities there. However, the interesting thing about where they're different, and, you know, this is something that's new. This is why I say so many of these picks are like from this sort of bygone era, because the thing that Donald Trump did that was so clever and that worked so well for him is that he took this very right-wing message, this very nationalist message, and spoke to a lot of the same grievances that Bob Roberts speaks about in this movie. But Trump took that, and with that message, he actually punched up at the sort of New World Order elite Democrat media complex and the sort of international organizations like, you know, NAFTA and the EU, right? And so he took this sentiment and punched up at people who his voters perceived were more powerful than they were. Whereas Roberts, you know, was a sort of incarnation of Reagan, you know, and that this reflects when the movie was made, obviously. The movie was made in the early 90s. Roberts, the messaging was all about the welfare queens, right? The people who are too lazy to work and they just complain and complain and complain. Yes, right? That's one of the famous songs in it.
Yeah.
You know, so he took this sort of classic, you know, 80s style Republican message of, yeah, it's the unemployed, it's the homeless, you know, who are holding you back. Whereas Trump took, you know, a lot of the same grievances that people felt, a lot of the same anger and frustration that they were working hard and they couldn't get ahead and they couldn't. But rather than explicitly, pardon me, point to the sort of downtrodden and vulnerable, he took a lot of that energy and made it a sort of populist anti-elite message, even with all the anti-immigrant stuff, right? It wasn't like the immigrant. Yeah, he said, okay, open borders are bad. You know, they're rapists, they're criminals, they're coming in, they're pouring in. But notice he didn't actually tie the job-taking element of immigration to the actual immigrants, right? He actually blamed the elites for wanting the immigrants to come in to take the jobs of the white working class. And so that was a very clever thing that Trump did that really Republicans were not doing prior to him coming along. So even though there are like some thematic similarities between Bob Roberts and Trump, that's a huge, huge difference. And that reflects the times, right? Because this was the pre-Clinton era. Bob Roberts was the pre-NAFTA era. And so, you know, back then, yeah, it was welfare queens, unemployed people, homeless people. You saw, you know, the Vidal character talks about homelessness, talks about poverty, and there's that great scene where they're debating and it just takes like snippets of what each candidate's messaging was. And Vidal was all about people who are more vulnerable, people who are disenfranchised, right? People who are poor. Roberts was all focused at the middle class, saying, why can't you get ahead? Why do you work so hard? And this, the American dream is not yours. It's because of the wasteful government spending that, you know, politicians like, I forget what his name was, Paste, vote for. And so there are many differences. Once again, it is a sign of the times. Like, if you made Bob Roberts today, it would be a much more sort of populist figure. But, you know, in many ways, they are the same, which is interesting, because Trump has governed more or less like a just traditional, like, conservative Republican.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it's great. It's a great gem of a film, and has so many cameos in it. So many people.
Oh yeah, Susan Sarandon, David Strathairn. Yeah, Helen Hunt, John Cusack. Yeah. You know, I love the scene with John Cusack where he just, like, he's in the middle of shooting that promo, and he just puts his hand on Bob Roberts' guitar and says, "I'm out." And leaves. Yeah, no, it's a really, really fun movie. And, you know, I mean, thematically, that's an interesting sort of hook there, that, like, it starts out this joke and ends up being more serious because, you know, people thought George Bush was a joke. George Bush the second was a joke. His presidency was more tragic than funny. And now Trump, obviously, people thought he would, you know, oh, this buffoon, right? See what happens. All right, well, I guess that's everything, right?
Yes. And I look forward to the campaign movies that will be in the post-Trump era. Because there's so many movies you can make about the Trump era. I mean, you, like I said, you can make a movie just about the campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure there will be one at some point.
I'm sure there will be. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on any major podcast player, subscribe to these podcasts wherever you can find them, and check us out at patreon.com/dodissidents. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your continued support. We'll see you next time.
Good night.